This is Audible.
Podium Audio presents The Ashes and the Star-Cursed King, Book 2 of Crowns of Nyaxia, written by Carissa Broadbent, performed by Aidan Snow and Amanda Lee Cobb. This audiobook contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Prologue. The king knew in this moment that his greatest love would also be his ruination, and that both would come in the unlikely form of a young human woman. He'd been putting off this realization for a long time, longer maybe than he wanted to admit to himself. Clarity, strangely enough, came in a moment of utter chaos, in the raging screams of the audience, in the blood-soaked Colosseum sands, in the flurry of bodies and sweat and gore as the young woman barely managed to stave off the brutal onslaught from her aggressor. The king wasn't doing much thinking then. He was only reacting, trying to get the Bloodborne's attention away from the human, trying to get between them, failing every time. The Bloodborne contestant had one goal and one goal alone, to go after the human. One strike, and another, and the young woman was on the ground, the Bloodborne towering over her, and the king couldn't feel anything but his heart in his throat as the sword rose. And then the king looked up into the stands, and his eyes so easily fell to the Bloodborne prince, standing there with his arms crossed and a cigarillo at his lips, smirking. He understood exactly what that smirk said. "I know what you want. You know what I want." It was here, in this moment, that the realization hit him. "You have fucking destroyed me," he had told the young woman the night before. She would destroy him, and it would be worth it. Because the king didn't even think, didn't even hesitate, as he met the prince's eyes, and he nodded. One little movement, and he sold away his kingdom. One little movement, and he knew exactly what he had to do. The next seconds blurred together, the prince's smirk becoming a satisfied smile, his signal to his blood-born contestant. The contestant's hesitation so perfectly calculated, and the human woman's sword through her chest. And then it was just him and her, and a prize that only one could live to claim. Only one choice was left then, of course. He didn't question it. He had just made a deal to save her life, a deal that would destroy his kingdom, and that he had only one way out of. 300 years was a long time to live, more time he'd often thought than any creature deserved. The two of them stared at each other for several long, silent breaths, unmoving. He could read her face so easily. It was endearing that someone so prickly was also so transparent. Right now, her conflict, her pain, shone through the cracks in her walls. She wouldn't move first, he knew. So he did. He knew her so well by now. He knew exactly how to push her to unleash all that ruthless, deadly, devastatingly fucking beautiful power. He was a good actor. He played his role well, even if beneath it he flinched with every wound his blade opened on her flesh. Many years later, the historians would whisper, "Why? Why did he do this?" If they could have asked him that night, he might have said, "Is it really so hard to understand?" Her eyes were the last thing he saw when he died. They were beautiful eyes, unusual. Bright silver like the moon, though usually darkened by clouds. He found many things about the human woman beautiful, but he thought her eyes were the most stunning of all. He'd never told her so. The moment her blade came to his chest, nightfire surrounding them both, he wondered if he should have. Those eyes always revealed more than she ever thought they did. He saw the exact moment she caught him in his act, realized he had tricked her. He almost laughed, because of course she noticed. She and those eyes had always seen right through him. It was too late, though. His hand gripped her wrist as he felt her bulk. His last words were not, "You have beautiful eyes." His last words were, "End it." She was shaking her head, the cold fire in her face fading to dismay. But he knew he was doing the right thing, and those eyes reassured him, because they were strong and determined and unique, neither human nor vampire, fierce and thoughtful. Better than his. More deserving of what would come next. "End it," he said, and pulled her wrist. And he did not look away from those eyes as he died, by the hand of the only person who deserved to kill him. Maybe the king always knew that his greatest love would be his ruination. Maybe he knew it the moment he met her. He'd know it the second time he died, too.
Part 1. Night. Chapter 1. Araya. My father lived in the hazy moments before I opened my eyes every day, caught between waking and dreaming. I treasured those moments, when my nightmares had faded but they'd yet to be replaced with the grim shadow of reality. I would roll over in silk sheets and draw in a deep inhale of that familiar scent. Rose and incense and stone and dust. I was in the bed I had slept in every day for 15 years, in the room that had always been mine, in the castle I had been raised in, and my father, Vincent, the king of the Nightborn, was alive. And then I would open my eyes, and the inevitable cruel clarity of consciousness would roll over me, and my father would die all over again. Those seconds between sleep and waking were the best of the day. The moment when the memory returned to me was the worst. Still, it was worth it. I slept whenever I could, just to claw those precious seconds back. But you can't stop time. Can't stop death. I tried not to notice that those seconds grew fewer each time I woke. This morning, I opened my eyes, and my father was still dead. Bang, bang, bang. Whoever was knocking on the door did so with the impatience of someone who had been at it for longer than they'd like. Whoever was knocking. I knew who was fucking knocking. I didn't move. I couldn't move, actually, because the grief had seized every one of my muscles. I clenched my jaw tighter, tighter until it hurt, until I hoped my teeth cracked. My fists were white-knuckled around the sheets. I could smell the smoke. Night fire, my magic, eating away at them. I had been robbed of something precious. Those hazy moments where everything was as it had been. I slipped from sleep with the image of Vincent's decimated body still seared into my mind, just as dead and just as mutilated in my sleeping moments as it was in my waking ones. "Wake up, princess!" The voice was so loud that even with the door closed, it boomed through the room. "I know those cat-like senses of yours. You think I don't know you're awake. I'd rather you let me in, but I'll barge in if I have to." I hated that voice. I hated that voice. I needed 10 more seconds before I could look at him. 5 more. Bang! Back! I threw back the covers, leapt from my bed, crossed the room in a few long strides, and threw open the door. "Knock on that door," I breathed, "one more fucking time." My husband smiled at me, lowering his raised fist, which had indeed been ready to knock one more fucking time.
"There she is."
I hated that face. I hated those words. And I hated most of all that when he said them now, I could hear the hidden undercurrent of concern. Could see the way his smirk stilled as he took me in, feet to eyes, in quick but thorough evaluation. His gaze paused at my hands, drawn into fists at my sides, and I realized I was clutching a scalded scrap of silk in one. I wanted to use it to threaten him, remind him that the silk could be him if he wasn't careful. But something about the flicker of concern over his face and all the things it made me feel killed that fire in my stomach. I liked anger. It was tangible and strong, and it made me feel powerful. But I felt anything but powerful when I was forced to recognize that Rain, the man who had lied to me, imprisoned me, overthrown my kingdom, and murdered my father, genuinely cared for me. I couldn't even look at Rain's face without seeing it spattered with my father's blood, without seeing how he once looked at me, like I was the most precious thing in the world, the night we had spent in bed together. Too many emotions. I stomped them down viciously, even though it physically hurt, as if swallowing razor blades. Easier to feel nothing. "What?" I asked. It was a deflated question, not the verbal strike I wanted it to be. I wished I didn't notice the slight disappointment on Rain's face. Worry, even.
"I've come to tell you to get ready," he said. "We have guests."
Guests? My stomach churned at the thought. The thought of standing in front of strangers, feeling them stare at me like a caged animal while struggling to keep myself together.
"You know how to control your emotions, little serpent,"
Vincent whispered in my ear.
"I taught you that."
I flinched. Rain's head cocked, a wrinkle deepening between his brow.
"What?"
Fuck, I hated that. Every time he saw it. Nothing. I knew Rain didn't believe me. He knew I knew it. I hated that he knew I knew it. I stomped that down too, until that emotion was just another numb buzz in the background, coated over with another layer of ice. It took constant effort keeping them that way, and I was grateful I could focus on that. Rain stared expectantly at me, but I said nothing.
"What?"
he said.
"No questions."
I shook my head.
"No insults? No refusal? No argument?"
"Do you want me to argue?" I almost asked. But then I'd have to see that little concern twitch on his face, and I'd have to recognize that he did want me to argue. And then I'd have to feel that complicated emotion too. So I just shook my head again. He cleared his throat.
"All right, well, here, this is for you."
He'd been carrying a silk bag, which he now handed to me. I didn't ask.
"It's a dress," he said.
"All right."
"For the meeting."
Meeting? That sounded important. "You don't care," I reminded myself. He waited for me to ask, but I didn't.
"It's the only one I've got, so don't bother arguing with me about it if you don't like it."
So pathetically transparent. He was practically poking me with a stick to see when I'd react. I opened the bag and glanced down to see a pile of black silk. My chest tightened. Silk, not leather. After everything, the idea of walking through this castle in anything other than armor. But I said, "It's fine. I just wanted him to go." But Rain now never left a conversation without a long, lingering stare, as if he had a lot to say, and it all threatened to bubble up before he left my room. Every single fucking time. "What?" I asked, impatient. Mother, I felt like my stitches were popping open one by one.
"Get dressed,"
he said at last, to my relief.
"I'll be back in an hour."
When he was gone, I closed the door and sagged against it, releasing a ragged exhale. Keeping myself together for those last few minutes was agonizing. I didn't know how I was going to do it in front of a bunch of Rain's cronies. For longer, for fucking hours. I couldn't do it.
"You will,"
Vincent whispered in my ear.
"Show them how strong you are."
I squeezed my eyes shut. I wanted to lean into that voice. But it faded, as it always did. And my father was dead once more.
I put on the stupid dress.
Rain was nervous. I wished I didn't recognize this so easily. No one else seemed to. Why would they? His act was meticulous. He embodied the role of conqueror king just as easily as he had embodied the role of human in the pub, and the role of bloodthirsty contestant, and the role of my lover, and the role of my kidnapper. But I saw it anyway. The single muscle tightening at the angle of his jaw, the slightly glazed over, too hard focus to his stare, the way he kept touching the cuff of his sleeve, like he was uncomfortable in the costume he wore. When he returned to my room, I'd stared at him, caught off guard despite myself. He wore a stiff, fine black jacket with blue trim and a matching sash over his shoulder, striking against the silver buttons and subtle metallic brocade. It was achingly similar to another outfit I'd seen him wear once, the outfit he had worn at the Half Moon Ball, the one that the Moon Palace had provided for him. Even then, though, he'd left his hair unkempt, his chin stubbled, as if the entire thing had been reluctant. Now he was clean-shaven. His hair was neat and tied up to reveal the top of his air mark over the back of his neck, peeking over the neck of his jacket. His wings were out, revealing the streaks of bright red at their edges and tips, and... At this, my throat grew so thick I couldn't swallow, couldn't breathe. The sight of the crown on Rain's head drove a spike between my ribs. The silver spires sat nestled in Rain's red-black waves, the contrast of the two jarring when I had only ever seen that metal against my father's sleek, fair hair. The last time I had seen that crown, it had been soaked in blood, ground into the sands of the Colosseum as my father died in my arms. Had someone had to pick through what remained of Vincent's body to get that crown? Had some poor servant had to clean his blood and skin and hair from all those intricate little whorls of silver? Rain looked me up and down.
"You look nice," he said.
The last time he had said that word to me, at the ball, it had sent a shiver up my spine. 4 letters full of hidden promise. Now it sounded like a lie. My dress was fine. Just fine. Plain. Flattering. It was light, finely made silk that clung to my body. It must have been made for me to fit that well, though I had no idea how they had known my measurements. It left my arms bare, though it had a high collar with asymmetrical buttons that wrapped around my side. I was secretly grateful that it covered my air mark. I avoided looking in the mirror when I changed these days. Partly because I looked like shit, but also because I hated to see that mark. Vincent's mark. Every lie seared into my skin in red ink. Every question I could never answer. Covering the mark was, of course, intentional. If I was going to be paraded in front of some kind of important Rishan people, I'd be expected to seem as non-threatening as possible. Fine. A strange look flickered over Rain's face.
It's not closed.
He gestured to his throat, and I realized that he meant the dress. In addition to the clasps in the front, there were buttons in the back too, and I'd only managed to make it halfway up.
Do you want me to?
No. I blurted it out fast, but in the seconds of silence that followed, I realized that I had no choice. Fine, I said after a moment. I turned around, showing my greatest enemy my bare back. I thought to myself, Riley, that Vincent would be ashamed that I was doing such a thing. But mother, I would take a dagger over Rain's hands, would rather feel a blade than his fingertips brushing my skin far too gently. And what kind of a daughter did it make me, that despite everything, some part of me craved an affectionate touch? I drew in a breath and didn't let it out until he fastened the last button. I waited for his hands to move away, but they didn't, like he was thinking about saying something more.
We're late.
I jumped at the sound of Kairos's voice. Rain pulled away. Kairos leaned against the doorframe, eyes slightly narrowed, smiling. Kairos was always smiling, but he was also always watching me very, very
closely. He wanted me dead. That was fine. Sometimes I wanted me dead, too.
Right.
Rain cleared his throat, touched the cuff of his sleeve. Nervous. So nervous. A previous version of myself, the one buried beneath the dozens of layers of ice I put between my emotions and the surface of my skin, would have been curious. Rain glanced over his shoulder at me, mouth twisting into a smirk, shoving his emotions down the same way I did.
Let's go, princess. We'll give them a show.
The throne room had been cleaned up since the last time I was here. Artwork and decor replaced, floors cleared of the broken pieces of Hiage artifacts. The curtains were open, revealing the silver-shrouded silhouette of Sivrinaj. It was calmer than it had been a few weeks ago, but little sparks of light occasionally burst through the night in the distance. Rain's men had gotten most of the inner city under control, but I could see clashes throughout the outskirts of Sivrinaj from my bedroom window. The Hiage were not going down without a fight, not even against the House of Blood. A twinge of something far beneath that ice, pride, maybe? Worry? I wasn't sure. It was so hard to tell. My father's throne, Rain's throne, sat upon the center of the dais. Kyrus and Keturah took up their places behind it against the wall, dressed in their best fineries, ever the dutiful guards. I assumed I would be there too, in the single chair perched there. But Rain took one look at it, cocked his head, and then dragged it up to place it beside the throne. Kyrus looked at him like he'd just lost his mind.
"You sure about that?"
he said, quietly enough that I knew I wasn't intended to hear.
"Sure am,"
Rain replied, turned to me, then motioned to the chair while taking his own, not giving Kyrus the chance to disagree. Still, the advisor's pursed lips said more than enough, as did Keturah's ever-present dagger glare. If I was supposed to be moved by this show of generosity or kindness or whatever the fuck this was supposed to be, I wasn't. I sat and I didn't look at Rain. A servant poked her head in through the double doors, bowing as she addressed Rain.
"They're here, Highness."
Rain glanced at Kyrus.
"Where the fuck is he?"
As if on cue, the scent of cigarillo smoke drifted through the air. Septimus strode in through the hall, ascending the dais in two long, graceful strides. He was followed by his two favorite bloodborne guards, Desdemona and Ilya, two tall, willowy women who looked so similar, I was certain they must be sisters. I'd never heard either of them speak.
"Apologies," he said breezily.
"Put that out,"
Rain grumbled. Septimus chuckled.
"I hope you intend to be more polite to your own nobles than that."
But he obeyed, putting out the cigarillo on his own palm. The smell of smoke was replaced by that of burning flesh. Kyrus wrinkled his nose.
"That's nice,"
he said dryly.
"The Nightborn King asked me to put it out. It would be rude not to."
Kyrus rolled his eyes and looked like he was trying very hard not to say anything else. Rain, on the other hand, just stared across the room at those closed double doors, as if burning straight through them to what lay beyond. His face was neutral, cocky even. I knew better.
"Vale?"
he asked Kyrus, voice low.
"He should have been here. Boat must be late."
That sound might as well have been a curse. Yes, Rain was very, very nervous. But his voice was calm and breezy as he said,
"Then I guess we're ready, aren't we? Open the doors. Let them in."
Chapter 2. Rain. The last time I had stood in this room with these people, I'd been a slave. Sometimes I wondered if they remembered me. I was nothing to them back then, of course. Another faceless body, something more akin to a tool or a pet than a sentient being. These people, of course, knew who I was now, knew what my past held. But I couldn't help but wonder as they filed into the vast, beautiful throne room whether they actually remembered me. They certainly didn't remember all those little mundane cruelties, to them just another part of another night. I remembered, though. Every humiliation, every violation, every strike, every casual agony. I remembered it all. And now here I was, standing before Rishan nobility, with a goddess-damned crown on my head. My, how things had changed. Not as much as I wished, though, because secretly, even after all this time, I was still terrified of them. I hid the truth with a performance that was so carefully curated, a fucking impeccable mimicry of my former master. I stood on the dais, my hand behind my back, my wings out, my crown perfect, my eyes cold and cruel. That last part wasn't difficult. The hatred, after all, was real. The nobles had been called from every corner of Rishan territory. They were old power. Most of them had been in power when Nekule was king. They were as finely dressed as I remembered, swaddled in silk garments so intricate that it was obvious some poor slave had spent weeks toiling over every stitch of embroidery. Their faces held the same haughtiness, the same elegant ruthlessness that I knew by now was shared by all vampire nobility. That was the same. But a lot was different, too. 200 years had passed. Maybe those 200 years hadn't marked their bodies, but they were hard years, and those hard years had certainly marked their souls. These were the handful of powerful Rishan who had survived a violent coup and then 2 centuries of Hiaj rule. They lorded over the ruins that Vincent had allowed them to keep. And now they were here, standing before a king they already hated, ready to fight like hell for their pile of bones. The worst of privilege. The worst of oppression. I lifted my chin, smirk at my lips. What a somber bunch, I said. I'd think you'd all be happier to be here, considering the circumstances of the last 2 centuries. I'd intended to make my voice sound like this, a perpetual threat, only thing these people understood. Still, it was a little shocking to hear it coming out of my mouth. I loosened my grip on my magic, letting wisps of night unfurl around my wings, highlighting, I knew, the streaks of red feathers, reminding them who I was and why I was here. Nyaxia has finally seen fit to restore us to rule, I said, pacing along the dais with slow, lazy steps. And with the power she has granted me, I will lead the House of Night into a stronger era than ever before. I have reclaimed this kingdom from the Hiaj, from the man who murdered our king, raped our queen, decimated our people, and took our crown for 200 years. I was so deeply aware of Araya's stare, digging into my back as I listed Vincent's misdeeds. I was constantly conscious of Araya, actually, through this entire act, knowing she could see right through it. But I couldn't show distraction. Instead, I let my lip curl in disgust. Now, I will make the House of Night once again something to fear. I will restore it to what it used to be. Every eye was carefully chosen, reminding them with every sentence of my role. I'd watched Nekule give some version of this speech countless times, and I'd watched these people lap it up like kittens at milk. But no matter how good my acting was, I was not Nekule. They just stared at me, the silence heavy, not with reverence, but with skepticism, and just a little bit of disgust. Despite the mark, the crown, the wings, they still saw a turned slave. Fuck them. I paced the dais, staring them down. I stopped short when I saw a familiar face, a man with ash-brown hair speckled with gray at his temples and sharp, dark eyes. I recognized him immediately, faster than I'd like, because the memories came in an unwelcome, violent slash. That face and hundreds of nights of suffering. He resembled Nekule in some ways. The same hard-angled features and the same cruelty in them. That made sense. They were cousins, after all. He'd been bad, not the worst. That prize went to his brother Simon, who I noticed with a quick scan of the room was not here today. I paused before him, head cocked, smirk at my lips. I just couldn't help myself. Martis, I said pleasantly. It's a surprise to see you here. I could have sworn my invitation was addressed to your brother. He couldn't make the journey, Martis said blandly, downright dismissively. And there was no mistaking the way his eyes flicked up my body, the twitch of disgust at his lip. The room was utterly silent. Harmless words on the surface, but everyone here knew what an insult they were. Simon was one of the most powerful Rishon nobles that still remained alive, hell, the most powerful. But he was still just a noble. When a king summons, you fucking come. Really, I said. That's a shame. What was so important? Martis, that snake, actually looked me straight in the eye and said, he's a very busy man. A dark, bloodthirsty pleasure seeped through my careful composure. I suppose you'll have to swear fealty on his behalf, then. I lifted my chin, staring down my nose at him, smiling broadly enough to reveal my fangs. Bow. I knew exactly what was about to happen. Simon and Martis had believed that they had a clear path to the throne. They were the king's only remaining relatives. Surely they must have thought Simon would find an heir mark on his skin when Nekule died, as Nekule's oldest next of kin. But unfortunately for them, unfortunately for me, Nyaxia wasn't so predictable. The pricks had probably spent the last 200 years assuming that no one had the mark at all. Must have been an unpleasant shock a few weeks ago when I revealed mine and then summoned them to Sivirnaj to kneel before the turned slave they'd abused for 70 years. They had no intention of doing so, and I knew that. Martis did not move. I cannot, he said. One might have expected a gasp through the room, a ripple of murmurs. No, the crowd was silent. No one was surprised. My brother only swears his fealty to the rightful king of the House of Night, and I bow only to that man, Martis went on. You are no king. The sneer at his lip twitched again. I've seen the way you've defiled yourself. I can't bow to someone who has done such things, nor to someone who stands on a dais beside a blood-born prince. Defiled myself. What a way to phrase it. It was almost fucking elegant the way he made this about some non-existent moral code, as if I'd chosen anything that had happened all those years ago, and as if he hadn't been one of the ones holding me down. I nodded slowly, considering them. I smiled at him. It was now entirely genuine. I couldn't have suppressed it even if I'd wanted to. Bloodlust hammered through my body with every heartbeat, taking over. And then, Martis said, words growing faster, hand thrust to the dais. You say you've freed us from the Hyaj, but I see Vincent's whore sitting right next to your throne. His eyes flicked over my shoulder, landing, I knew, on Araya. I knew that look. Hatred and hunger and desire and disgust all rolled together. Fine if you want to fuck her, he snarled. But look at her. So untouched, not a scratch on her. All you need is a mouth and a cunt. Why did you bother keeping the rest? My smile disappeared. I no longer found it fun to toy with him. I had been keeping everything about this meeting calculated, deliberate, but now I moved on nothing but impulse. I appreciate your honesty, I said calmly. And I appreciate Simon's. I stepped down the stairs in two long strides and placed my hands gently on either side of Marta's face. He really did look so damned similar to how he had centuries ago. Maybe people never changed. I had felt different ever since Nyaxia restored the power of the Rishon airline. I'd felt something change in me from the moment Nekule died. but I'd been able to stifle that power, subdue it into something easier to control and less likely to draw attention. But ever since that night, my magic had surged back with an uncontrollable force, like Nyaxia's gift had ripped open a new vein of it. It was actually something of a relief to use it at full force again. I let it go. Asterisk was both exhausting and exhilarating to use. It felt like the raw power of the stars bursting through my skin, tearing through my body. It tore through Marta's, too. The room went white, then black, then snapped back into an unpleasant sharpness. Warmth spattered over me. A dull thump cut through the silence as a broken, crushed body fell to the floor in a pile of silk. The light faded, revealing a sea of shocked, silent faces. I held Marta's head. The features twisted into satisfying confusion. Now that was a new expression for him. A few people near the front of the crowd took several quick steps back to avoid the pool of black blood spreading over the marble. There was no screaming, no hysterics. Vampires, even vampire nobles, were well accustomed to bloodshed. They weren't horrified, no, but they were surprised. Maybe it was unwise to murder the brother of my most powerful noble. In this moment, I didn't care. I felt nothing but satisfaction. I wasn't built for this bullshit, the preening, the parties, the politics, but this, the killing, I was good at that. Felt good to give it to someone who deserved it. I glanced over my shoulder, I wasn't sure why. I did it without thinking. The look on Araya's face struck me. Satisfaction. Bloodthirsty satisfaction. The first time in weeks I'd seen something that looked like fight in her eyes. Goddess, I could have fucking wept for it. There she is, I thought. And something about the way she stared at me, right in the eyes, speared through my costume and my performance. I could practically hear her saying it, too. There he is. I turned back to the crowd, stepping backwards up the dais steps. I am the Nightborn King, I said, voice low and deadly. Do you think I'm going to beg for your respect? I don't need your respect. Your fear will do. Bow. And I let the head fall with a sickening wet thump, rolling down the stairs right into his former body. Fittingly, the position it had fallen into did indeed resemble a bow of prostration. The nobles stared. The world held its breath. I held my breath and tried desperately not to show it. I was walking a very thin line here. Vampires respected brutality, but only from the right people. I wasn't one of the right people. Maybe I never would be. If one or two refused to bow, I could handle that. But, air mark or no, I needed some loyalty from my nobles, especially if I ever wanted to get out from beneath bloodborne control. If all of them refused. The door burst open, the slam against the walls splitting the silence like a sword through flesh. Vale stood in the doorway. I never thought I would be relieved to see that man, but Ix's tits, I had to physically stop myself from letting out a sigh of relief. He took in the scene, me, the crowd, the advisors, Marta's bloody body, and immediately strung together what he'd just walked into. He strode purposefully into the room, so fast his long dark waves flew out behind him. The crowd parted for him. A woman followed him, then lingered at the back of the crowd, looking around the throne room with wide, curious eyes, curly chestnut hair piled atop her head. My king, Vale said as he approached the dais. I apologize for my tardiness. Before me, he immediately dropped into a smooth kneel, right at the center of the crowd, right into the pool of Marta's seeping blood. Highness, his voice boomed through the throne room. He knew exactly what he was doing, knew to make himself as visible as possible. You have my sword, my blood, my life. I swear to you my loyalty and my service. It is my greatest honor to serve as your head of war. A strange echo of the past in those words. The last time I'd heard Vale say them, it was to Nekule. Inwardly, I cringed at hearing them directed at me. Outwardly, I accepted them as if they were nothing but what was expected. I lifted my gaze to the others, waiting. Vale was a noble. He was respected. He'd just tipped some precarious scale. Slowly at first, and then in a wave, the other nobles lowered into bows. This was exactly what I'd wanted, needed, and yet the sight made me so viscerally uncomfortable. I was all at once very conscious of the crown on my head, worn by centuries of kings before me, kings who were cursed to rules of cruelty and paranoia, kings I had killed, directly or indirectly, just like they had killed the ones who came before them. I couldn't help myself. I glanced over my shoulder again, just for a split second, barely long enough for anyone to notice. Aurea's eyes skewered me, like she was seeing that little shard of dark honesty stripped bare. I looked away quickly, but that stare stayed with me anyway.
Chapter 3. Aurea. The look on Rain's face lingered with me longer than I wish it did. Why would he give me that? Something so honest. I hated that I knew it was honest. I was ushered out of the throne room quickly after that, Rain striding away without giving his nobles a second glance, casual in a way that I knew was calculated. Katura's guards flanked me, and Rain walked several steps ahead, though I could see the whitened knuckles at his side. He didn't even say a word to me as Kairos, Katura, and the noble, his new head of war, flocked around him, the group of them disappearing down a side hallway while the guards ushered me to the staircase that led back to my rooms. Septimus joined me several steps up. I smelled him before I heard him. He walked silently, but that damned cigarillo smoke gave him away.
"Well, that," he said, "was interesting, wasn't it?"
He eyed the guards, who had visibly stiffened in his presence.
"Oh, pardon my rudeness. Am I interrupting?"
The guards said nothing, as always. Septimus smirked, satisfied with this non-answer.
"I knew your husband's past was a subject of, we'll call it controversy, among the Rishon nobles,"
he went on to me.
"But I have to say, that exceeded my expectations. Suppose I'll probably have to call in more troops from the House of Blood."
He flicked ash to the marble staircase, grinding it under his heel.
"Looks like the Rishon won't be much help, if that's the best they have to offer."
We turned up another flight of stairs. I had nothing to say. Septimus's words floated through me like background noise.
"You," he said at last, "have gotten much quieter."
"I don't just talk for the sake of hearing my own voice."
"That's a shame. You always had such interesting things to say."
He was playing with me, and I hated it. If I'd had the energy, maybe I would have granted his wish and snapped at him. I didn't have the energy, so I said nothing. We made it to the top floor. Just as we rounded the corner, my bedchamber door ahead, quick steps approached from behind. Desdemona, one of Septimus's guards, fell into stride beside him.
"Pardon, Highness, we have an issue."
Septimus and Desdemona fell back while I kept walking. Still, my ears perked.
"It's about the attack on Misrata," Desdemona was saying, voice low. "We'll need to pull troops from the armory if we want to get enough men in 2 weeks."
My door swung open, jerking my attention back. The familiar haven, prison, of my bedchamber opened before me.
"Well, then do it,"
Septimus was saying, sounding impatient.
"I don't care about—"
I walked inside. The door shut behind me, closing me in once again. I loosened the buttons on my dress and immediately flopped onto the bed, waiting for the all-too-familiar sound of my door. 4 clicks. 4 locks. Click. Click. I waited. Seconds passed. Footsteps faded. My brow furrowed.
Curiosity piqued for the first time in weeks. I sat up. Had I imagined it? My mind had been blurry lately. Maybe I'd missed the other two. I went to the door and squinted into the crack. Two shadows interrupted the sliver of light from the hall. The upper two locks, simple sliding bars, were closed, and the bottom two had been left open. Fuck. My first day here, I'd managed to get three of the locks open. It was the bottom one, the big deadbolt, that had evaded me, but now... I stepped away from the door, sizing it up the way I'd sized up an opponent in the ring. A glimmer of a foreign, unpracticed sensation, hope, stirred in my chest. I could get those locks open. I could get out. It was nighttime still, albeit nearing dawn. I should wait until the sun rose and the vampires had mostly gone to their respective rooms. Then I winced, thinking of the room right next to mine, and the man within, who'd be back any minute. Vampire hearing was impeccable. If I tried to get out while he was there, he'd know it. But I'd paid attention to Rain's movements, too. He spent very little time in his room. Oftentimes, he didn't return until well after sunrise. So I'd have to gamble. Wait until tomorrow, wait long enough that most vampires had gone to sleep, but not long enough that Rain had. And then what?
You know this castle better than anyone here, little serpent,
Vincent whispered to me. And I flinched, as I always did when I heard his voice. He was right, though. Not only had I lived in this castle my entire life, I'd learned how to sneak around it with no one noticing. Not even the last king of the Nightborn. I just needed to bide my time.
Chapter 4. Rain. That, Karis muttered, was a shit show. I don't think it went that badly. Katura closed the door behind us. The room was simultaneously too empty and so messy you couldn't think in it. It had been a library before, a room devoted to displaying items that were very beautiful, very old, or very expensive, and usually all three. Katura had commanded most of the castle to be stripped for information, for traps, and some poor servant had gotten halfway through pulling the books off the shelves before she decided that this particular room was the only acceptable base of operations. Now it was a haphazard disaster. The shelves on one side bare, piles of books shoved into a corner. The long table at the center of the room was covered with notes and maps and books and a few discarded glass goblets from the night before, congealing red, crusted at their bottoms. Vincent had been in power for 200 years. There was a lot of clutter to strip away. I was secretly grateful for it. The night the Qajari ended, I had flown here with a pit of dread in my stomach. I'd had more than enough distractions, Araya's unconscious body in my arms, Vincent's blood all over my hands, an air mark burning on my back, and an entire fucking kingdom on my shoulders. And yet I'd still paused at the doors of this castle, the memory of the past chasing me. Maybe that made me a coward. But 200 years was a long time. The place looked very different under Vincent's rule. It was enough to disguise the worst of the memories night to night. Still, I couldn't bring myself to visit some wings at all. I dragged a seat out and sat down heavily, propping my heels up on the corner of the table. The chair groaned slightly under my weight. I let my head fall back and stared at the ceiling. Silver tiles etched with Hiaj wings. Ugh. What were you going to do if Vale didn't show up when he did? Karis asked. Slaughter them all? Doesn't sound like a bad idea, I said. It's what the great Nekule Vesaris would have done. You aren't him. Something about his tone made my head snap up. He said that like it was a bad thing. That thought sickened me. For some reason, my mind drifted back to the night of the wedding and the promise I had made Araya when I'd practically begged her to work with me. We'll rip apart the worlds that subjugated both of us, and from the ashes, we'll build something new. I'd meant every word of it. But Araya had just looked at me with hatred and disgust, and hell if I could blame her for that. And now here I was, picking blood out from under my fingernails, deciding how to best make myself just like the man who had destroyed me. She could always see right through the bullshit. A knock rang out, thankfully interrupting that line of conversation. Keturah opened the door and Vale stepped in. He paused and bowed his head to me as he closed the door behind him. Highness, sometimes it's the little things that make the reality of a situation hit you. Vale's over-the-top declaration of fealty hadn't done it, but this casual little half-bow, the exact same one he used to give Nekule, it made me feel as if I was 2 centuries in the past, my former master standing right behind me. Keturah had wanted Vale as my head of war. She was good at execution, but we needed someone strategic, and Karis had insisted that it be someone with noble blood, someone respected by all the people who wouldn't respect me. "To legitimize you," he said. Legitimize? I had a blessing from a goddess and an ugly magical tattoo I couldn't get rid of, yet it was Vale who was going to give me legitimacy. It was hard for me to forget. No, Vale had never participated in the depravity quite like the others did. Maybe he thought consensual lovers were more enthusiastic. Maybe he inflicted enough bloodshed at work that it wasn't what he wanted to do for fun. Didn't make him a saint. And it didn't mean that he didn't still look at me as a slave. "I apologize for my lateness today," he said. "Storm over the seas. You can't control the wind. And I'm sure your wife probably needed time to recover." A blink. "From the turning," I clarified, then smiled. "Congratulations, by the way." Vale's eyes hardened, gleaming like those of a guard dog barely tethered. Did he think I was threatening her? It's what Nekule would have done. But no. I just didn't like that Vale had turned some human woman and dragged her over here. I didn't like it at all. "It went as well as it could have," he said. "She's resting, a bit seasick on the journey. I wanted to get her settled." His expression softened, and that I wasn't quite expecting. It looked oddly close to actual affection. I wasn't sure if that made me feel any better. Nekule had loved Nessunin, his wife. Hadn't saved her from anything. "Well, I'm glad you made it," I gestured to the table and the maps strewn across it. "Plenty to catch up on, as you can see." The consensus after hours of talking was that we were in deep shit. Vale thought it was stupid that I had taken Septimus's deal. He thought it was very stupid that I had done so without negotiating his terms. And he thought it was monumentally stupid that I had kept Araya alive. I dismissed these criticisms as casually as I could manage. I couldn't justify why I had made those decisions without revealing more than I wanted to about my true motivations. Motivations that held none of the vicious cruelty they wanted to see from me. Still, the reality of our situation was bleak. The Hiage were not backing down. They held on to several key cities. 200 years of power had made their forces strong. Vincent, even at the height of his power, hadn't rested. He'd continued building his strength and whittling down the Rishan until we had almost nothing left. That meant our brute strength relied almost completely on the Bloodborne. And yes, the bastards were efficient at what they did. They had bodies, and they were willing to throw them at anything. With the Bloodborne's help, we'd managed to beat back many of the biggest Hiage strongholds. But it also meant that if Septimus decided to withdraw, we would be fucked. The Rishan forces just weren't capable of holding up against the Hiage alone. Vale did not hide his frustration with this situation. A couple of centuries away from polite society had made him even more blunt than he used to be, which was saying something. Still, I had to admit that he was good at what he did. He ended the meeting with a list of recommendations to strengthen our position, and when we disbanded, he was already following Keturah out the door with a list of questions about our armies. Karis, though, lingered after Vale and Keturah were gone. I hated that, the hovering. He used to do it back then, too, when he was going to try to whisper something in someone's ear and make it seem like it had all been their idea. I sighed. I don't need to be handled, just say it. Fine, I'll be straightforward. That went badly. We already knew the nobles hated you. Now, nothing was going to stop them from hating me. Actually, maybe we should have thought of that as a test. Which noble would bow willingly? If it was a test, Karis said dryly, then no one passed. Exactly. So let's just execute them all. He gave me a long, steady stare, like he was trying to decide if this was a joke. It was not. I raised my eyebrows, a silent, well? Do you have people to install in their places? He said. I could find someone. He leaned across the table, weaving his fingers together. Who? Do tell. I hated when Karis was right about things. He was just so damned smug about it. I'm just saying that you need to be careful, his voice lowered, as if to evade prying ears. We already rely far too heavily on the Bloodborne. Understatement. Septimus practically had me bent over his desk. And the last thing we need, he went on, is to destroy the loyalty of the scant forces we do have. Appearances are everything. Which brings me to... He cleared his throat. Her. I rose, my hands stuffed in my pockets, and paced the room. What about her? A beat of silence that said, you know what. Karis seemed to be choosing his words with uncharacteristic care. She is a danger to you. She can't act against me. She won the Qajari reign. My hand found its way to my chest, right where her dagger had pierced it. There was no scar, no mark. There wouldn't be. With Aurea's wish, the act had been undone. I could have sworn I felt it sometimes, though. Right now, it pulsed with a vicious throb. But I hid all that as I turned to him with a smug smirk. You can't say it doesn't look good to have Vincent's daughter leashed at my side. I'd always been a good mimic. I slipped a little of Nekule's cruelty into my voice, just like I had that day in the ring when I justified letting Aurea live with a litany of atrocities. Karis's face was stone, unconvinced. After what he did to Nessunin, I added, don't you think we deserve that satisfaction? He flinched at the mention of Nessunin, just like I knew he would. Just like I often did when old memories caught me off guard. Maybe, he admitted after a long moment. But it doesn't do anything to help her now. I swallowed and turned to the wall of books, pretending to admire the trinkets on the shelves. I didn't like to think about Nessunin, but I'd been doing it a lot these last few weeks. She was everywhere in this castle. All of it was everywhere here. I couldn't help Nessunin when she was alive. I couldn't help her when she was dead. And here I was just using her memory to manipulate the people around me. She had been used her entire life. Now she was being used in death, too. Karis wanted me to be just like Nekulai. He didn't even know how close he was to getting that wish. I withdrew my hands from my pockets. Some of Marta's blood still remained under my fingernails. Don't you hate them? I said. I'd meant for the question to sound more lilting, more casual than it really did, because Karis had been there for all of it, too, just another one of Nekulai's pets. And yet now he could sit here and advocate for an alliance with the people who had inflicted unimaginable degradation upon us. It genuinely amazed me. Of course I hate them, he said, but we need them, for now. Who wins if you kill them all and we lose the House of Night to Septimus, not us? She used to say that too, remember? I turned to see a soft, distant smile on his face, a rare expression for him. Remember who wins. He said it fondly, but my teeth ground. Yes, I remembered. Couldn't even count how many times I got right up to the edge, just about to strike back. And whenever it happened, Nessunin would stop me. Don't let them win, she would beg, her big brown eyes deep and damp. Who wins if he kills you? I remember, I said. Karis shook his head, a sad smile at his lips. We were all a little in love with her, right? Yes, we were all a little in love with Nessunin. I had been the one sleeping with her, but all of us loved her. How could you not, when she was the only kindness you knew, the only one who treated you like a person instead of a collection of body parts? So think about that, he said. That's what I do. Whenever I feel it, I ask myself, who wins? He said it like it was some great proverb, some enlightening wisdom. I said, thoroughly unconvinced. I didn't really sleep much these days. The castle had an entire wing that was intended to be the king's residence. I'd visited it nearly a full week after the takeover, putting it off for as long as I could. The decorations were different, and yet so much was the same. I'd walked through all the rooms in silence. I paused at a doorway, at a dent carved into the dark wood, a dent I remembered being made with Keturah's head centuries ago, then barely even visible beneath the blood. I could still feel the marks where her teeth had dug into the trim. I'd paused, too, at Vincent's bureau. It had all been pulled apart, his clothes strewn across the room. The top was adorned with little trinkets that were probably worth more than most estates. But mixed in among those treasures were little aged pieces of paper with handwriting that I recognized as Aurea's, though in the clumsy curls of a child. All were studies, it looked like, notes on fighting stances. The corners of my mouth had tightened. Of course, even as a little girl, Aurea would have taken her studies seriously. Endearing. So fucking endearing. And then, just as quickly, the smile faded, because apparently I wasn't the only one who thought so, if Vincent had held on to these tattered papers for all these years. No, I didn't stay in the king's wing. My suite was right next to Aurea's. Both had multiple rooms, but our bedchambers shared a wall. It was a bad habit, but every time I returned to the room, I hesitated at that wall. Tonight was no exception. When Aurea cried, it was this horrific, violent sound, silent at first, and then the silence would shatter into the jagged inhale of a sob, like she was suffocating herself and her body rebelled for air. It sounded like a wound tearing open. The first time I'd heard it, I made an excuse to go over there, pounded on the door, and pulled some bullshit request out of my ass when she opened it. I couldn't even remember what had come out of my mouth. Come on, fight with me. Let me distract you. But Aurea had just looked so empty. Like it was physically painful to be in my presence in that moment. Like she was begging for mercy. Now I placed my hand against our shared wall and listened, against my better judgment. Silence. And there it was. I swallowed thickly. My fingers curled into a fist against the brocade wallpaper. One wall. Thin enough that I could hear through it. Might as well be iron. Don't you dare stop fighting, Princess, I told her the night before the final trial. It would break my damned heart. And I had been so fucking smug when I'd wrung that fight out of her in that last battle. Well, she wasn't fighting now. I didn't go to her room anymore. I'd make sure that headache tea was sent to her the next evening. I'd make sure she had what she needed. But what she needed right now certainly wasn't me. I got into bed but didn't sleep. Nessunin's words floated through my mind, this time with a cynical tinge that was distinctly mine. Who wins? Well, Nessunin sure as fuck didn't. And Aurea didn't either.
Chapter 5. Aurea. I waited until the sun was high over Sivrinaj to make my move. I'd spent the night praying that no one would come bother me, replacing those precious locks behind them. I was fortunate. Rain had left overnight and hadn't returned yet. I was acutely aware of that, both because my escape relied upon his absence and because I knew he could show up at any moment. I had twisted a silver hoop earring I found in the dresser into a clumsy hook. The top lock, a sliding bolt, slipped easily. But the second gave me trouble. I had very little space to work with between the various locks, and the metal was stiff. Several times I stopped just short of snapping my makeshift pick in half. "Fuck," I hissed.
"You have more power than this silly little hook,"
Vincent whispered in my ear. My gaze fell from the broken silver to my fingertips holding it. All the doors and windows and locks in this place were, of course, fortified against magic. But even if that hadn't been the case, my magic had felt very far away these last few weeks. Calling upon it required me to dig too deep, right into all these tender wounds I couldn't even think about opening. I worried that I'd bleed to death before I could close them again. But Nightfire, maybe, could melt that one little bar of metal that held this door closed. I dreaded so much as trying, but if I had a chance at freedom, I wasn't about to relinquish it because I was too scared of myself to try. The first call to my magic was met with nothing. I gritted my teeth, dug deeper. It hit on things I'd been trying to bury these last few weeks.
"I taught you better than this," Vincent whispered.
I thought of his voice, his face, framed against the sands of the Colosseum, bloody and raw and... The burst of Nightfire was too hot, too bright. It engulfed my hand. I clamped down hard on the wave of grief, anger, sadness.
"Control, little serpent,"
Vincent snapped.
"Control."
"I can't focus with you lecturing me," I thought, and swallowed shame at the sudden silence of his voice. I took a deep breath, two, until my heartbeat slowed. The flame dimmed a little. "Control." I whittled the Nightfire down until it was a small orb, then dipped my broken, twisted silver into it. The Nightfire hovered at its end like a flame to a match. There was no way this was going to work, I thought. Then jammed the twisted metal through the gap between the door and the frame, pressing metal to metal. I poured my magic into my connection to that little night flame and pushed. The door flew open. I went rolling across the tile floor, stopping myself just short of sliding into the opposite wall. I looked down. A twist of partially melted, scorched metal lay on the tile. I slipped it into my pocket, then turned around to see my bedchamber door. Wide open. The hallway was empty. I was out. For now. Goddess fucking help me. I quickly, silently closed my door, rubbing away scorch marks best I could. The second lock was broken, but hopefully no casual passerby would notice that. It was wartime. I'd seen firsthand what that looked like in this castle. Daylight or no, most hallways would be occupied or heavily guarded. Certainly the weapon stores, and definitely exits. But I could get around that. My lips twisted with a smirk of satisfaction. The movement felt uncomfortable, like the muscles were out of practice. Good thing I knew this castle better than anyone. Vincent had been a very cautious man. He'd renovated this castle to add passageways and tunnels and confusing hallways that led nowhere, infinitely aware of the possibility that one day his fortress could be turned against him. He'd showed me some of these hallways when I was young, making me memorize the paths to his wing. Even when I was only a child, he never sugarcoated why it was so important that I knew this.
"This is a dangerous world, little serpent,"
he'd said.
"I'll teach you how to fight, but I'll also teach you how to flee."
He never showed me all the passageways, of course. He didn't want to give me too much freedom. But I'd explored the other ones, too, in secret. Today, though, I followed the path my father had left for me. It was downright stupid to run straight for the outdoors. Yes, it was daylight, and that might help me, but guards would be watching everywhere. I needed to know what I was getting into. I needed a weapon.
My step faltered as I remembered what I had done the last time I'd held a blade. The last heart I'd pierced. I shook away the memory of Rain's dead face, narrowly escaped the image of Vincent's, and continued down the hall. I could hear distant voices near the stairwell. One of the entrances to Vincent's web of hallways was nearby. No one had discovered it yet, it seemed. It was well hidden, the seams of the door covered by strategically placed tapestries. Sometimes these passageways were locked, but today I was lucky. The door opened easily to my touch. The tunnels were narrow, lit by forever-fueled nightfire torches. They had been constructed around the existing layout of the castle, so they were convoluted and awkward to navigate. Many of the doors inside were locked, leaving me little option but to push forward and down several sets of stairs. Most of the other exits here would lead into hidden passages within various bedchambers. The last thing I wanted was to end up in some Rishon general's room. Instead, I traveled down several sets of tight, winding stairs. Farther still, until I reached the ground floor, until I passed it. I had rarely been allowed to come here as a child, but I still remembered exactly where it was. Vincent treasured his privacy, and he got very little of it. So, near the beginning of his reign, he'd had a new basement dug out beneath the easternmost tower of the castle, an underground wing that was specifically for him. It had two access points. One led right up to the ground floor. I could escape through there. But more importantly, Vincent had often kept weapons and supplies in his rooms. I could arm myself before I left. The wing's entrance was closed, a set of oak double doors, stained black, that seemed to melt right into the shadows, save for their silver handles. I held my breath as I eased them open, very slowly, very silently. I didn't know for sure that the Rishon hadn't discovered this place. Vincent's wing was private, but not a secret. But my luck, it seemed, held out a little longer. Not a soul. An empty hallway stood before me. This one, unlike the dark, poorly maintained paths I'd come from, looked like it belonged in this castle. Indigo blue tile floors, black doors, silver knobs, Hiage art framed in gilded presentations on the walls. 8 doors lay ahead of me, 4 on each side, and then a stairwell that led up, cradled by swooping silver rails. I hadn't been here in so long. I didn't know or remember what all these rooms contained. I tried the first 2 doors to find them locked. The 3rd, the 4th. Fuck. Maybe they were all locked and I wasted my precious freedom to come down here for... The 5th door opened. I froze. Stopped breathing. Stopped moving. I stood in the open doorway, my hand still on the knob. Oh, goddess. Vincent's study. It smelled like him. For a moment, it felt agonizingly like my father hadn't died. Like he was in this room somewhere, a book cradled in his hands, a serious line between his brows. The past barreled over me like splintered steel, just as sharp and just as painful. It was a small room, smaller than Vincent's other offices. A large wooden desk sat at its center, and 2 velvet armchairs in the corner near the fireplace. Bookcases lined the walls, boasting hundreds of black and burgundy and silver and blue spines of old but well-kept books. The desk was covered with clutter. Open tomes, papers, notes, and what looked like a pile of broken glass at its center. When I could make myself move again, I went to the desk. It was far more cluttered than Vincent usually left things. Then again, at the end, he'd been... Well, I avoided thinking about the way he'd been in those last few months. My eyes fell to a wine glass sitting among the notes, dried red caked at its bottom. If I looked closely, I could see little smudges near its stem. Fingerprints. I reached out to touch it, then pulled away just short, not wanting to mar those remnants of him. Even losing Ilana hadn't prepared me for this. The sheer degree of fucking obsession that grief forces upon you. It took everything I had to force my mind to think about something other than him. It had exhausted me so completely. But now that I was here, surrounded by him, I never wanted to leave. I wanted to curl up in this chair. I wanted to cocoon myself in the coat left casually slung over one of the armchairs. I wanted to wrap this wine glass in silk and preserve his fingerprints forever. I picked through the papers on the table. He'd been working hard. Inventories, maps, reports about the attack on the Moon Palace. I rifled through the stack of letters and paused, my hand shaking at a piece of parchment. "Debrief," the top read. "Salinae." It was